Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's episode 8, season 10. Two more to go. What's going to come up in those two episodes? I'll be honest with you, I haven't yet decided. Are we going to do another quiz? I'll be honest with you, as yet, I haven't yet decided. But we'll talk more about that. We'll see what the boys want to do as well. Before we crack on, Ryan Champion, obviously, a little bit tied up at the moment. He could even be stuck in a mud hole. We really, really don't know. As we record this, we're struggling to get some time through for special stage 20 of the East African Safari Rally. Obviously, we've been regurgitating the videos and bits and pieces on the Facebook and the Twitter. At one point, he was leading. We really don't know where he's at the moment. It is a very unique event when it comes to results and things like that. So fingers crossed. By the time you get this, we'll have a clear picture and we'll put it out on Twitter and stuff like that. But anyway, without further ado, on my left this week, I have a flying Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How are you?
I'm good. And on my right, it seems odd because normally he's on the left, but Jack Bennion. Hello.
Hello, Tony Simpson, and a massive Absolute Rally happy birthday to you for yesterday.
Thanks, mate. That's really special. Thanks, boys. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's nice. It's nice. And you know what's really nice is you didn't get me a card.
I sent you a message.
You did send me a message. No, you did, Trev, and good on you. Good on you. Jack didn't.
I did.
Yeah, he did, actually. He did. I'll take that back. Do you know what? It's one of those birthdays. Right, and Jack, you haven't got there yet. I think Trev has. I'm being tactful, what I can be. Is you really don't care?
Yeah, I've never cared.
Oh, haven't you? Didn't you care for like your 21st?
I missed my 21st, actually.
You were doing a rally? Were you doing a rally?
No, backpack in Australia. And I don't know where I was, in the outback somewhere. And about 3 days later, I phoned home and my mum wished me a happy 21st.
Wow. I can't remember my 21st for completely and utterly other reasons. Jack, can you remember your 21st?
I can. It wasn't that long ago.
I know. Kidding. That's the point.
Just kidding. It was a little while ago now.
It wasn't that long ago, Jack. It wasn't that long ago. Compared to me and Trev, you're a relative. You know, you're just out of short pants.
Well,
I tried to make that as condescending sound as possible. Did it work?
Yeah, I mean, being someone who works for MN and is quite young, I do get condescending comments quite often, so I'm quite used to it now.
I can well imagine. And you don't have to make all those cups of tea, Jack Bennion, just so you know. All right, you don't have to make all those cups of tea. You can stop it now.
Thanks,
and go to get the lunches. Yeah, it's all right. Speaking of MN, there's only one story this week, Jack. It dominates the front page and pages 2 and 3. Did we really think he was going to stick around at M Sport? Did we really think Seb was going to do another year?
Has Sebastian Ogier been confirmed at M Sport? Oh, sorry, I must have missed this.
You missed that one.
Yeah, I must have glossed over that one. No, fantastic news for M Sport for sure. And Sebastian's obviously made his decision now. Everyone knows he's coming back to M Sport for another year, and he'll be joined by Elvin Evans, who will get some different boots for next year, which I'm sure he'll be very happy about. Onto the Michelins for the whole year for next year, so he'll be on an even keel with Sebastian. So it's going to be interesting to see how the two of them sort of gel together. And I guess the only question left now is who's going to fill that third seat for M Sport.
Trev, did you see Seb hanging around?
No, I didn't think he was leaving. I know his wife was at the end of the stop line, at the end of the last stage in Rally GB. And of course, it'd be nice to spend some time with his 2-year-old boy. And that was never going to happen, in my opinion, simply because last year he wasn't the fastest person in the field, and he'll want to end by being that. To give you an idea, just to clarify what I mean by that. So in 2013, he had 110 stage wins. How many did he have last year, do you think?
In 2017?
Yep.
I know the answer to this, and I'm going to level with you, Trev. It would be amiss of me not to point this out. I've already recorded the end of the podcast. The end of the podcast is with Martin Holmes. Martin Holmes likes his stats.
Right. Okay.
So I feel it'd be amiss of me to answer that question.
Trev,
so
I'll have a crack.
Go on, Jack.
I'll have a crack. Is it 25?
22. Close. Oh, but no banana this time. Very close. 2, Neville's 56, Tanak 30. But again, if you look at the rally leaders, if you look at how many times he's been leading the rally, way back in 2013, 151 times. Last year, 14 times. Now, what he did last year with his own standards as regards to performance, I don't think he'd be happy with. I think that was the main motivator for him staying. And that's the reason why he's asked for better performance. Without doubt, the Fiesta was the most consistent, fastest car. So in other words, the reliability and the speed came together, but he didn't quite dial it in the way he wanted to. And I think that was his driver. That's his motivation for 2018, to come out with a little bit more development on the car, which I think was the main push. Money-wise, you know, you hear talked about, he is five times world champion, so he needs to get paid. He didn't have the benefit this year of having the Volkswagen money, which, you know, whatever compensation he got paid for them pulling out and losing that year. But I think his goal and his target for 2018 is just to show everybody that he is still the fastest driver in the world. And I don't think he achieved that in 2017, even though he won the championship. And by his standards, that's saying a lot, because he is just incredible. There's no slight on his ability to become a world champion, but I think he wants to do it in a more commanding way in 2018.
Do you know what? I'm gonna, before I bring Jack in, I know Jack will want to say something here. Has he just not drove maybe a little bit smarter this year, Trev?
Well, he's done that since Argentina last year. I've spoken about this before. If you look at the stats from Argentina, the year Hayden Paddon won it, remember, they went head-to-head. For some reason on the last day, he didn't have a crack, or he was slowest in the... even Danny Sordo beat him on the power stage that year, I remember it well. And from then on, he seemed to be doing it in a way where he just did enough to win the title. But I think he was touch and go this year as to whether he could do that or not for a chunk of it. And I don't think he was that happy. He gave credit, in fairness, to Aitanek and Neville, and he always does. He gives credit to people when they're faster than him, but I think he'd prefer to be faster. So that's only my opinion, of course.
No, absolutely. Jack, how about you?
I'd agree with most of the things said there, I think. But I think, you know, he is a person who wants to win championships. You know, he's not there to win stages or rallies. He's a man who wants to be the champion of the world every year. And, you know, we've seen that again this year. He's the only person who can, in the current field, who can really deliver that to that standard, isn't he? And, you know, he's had a, I think in terms of talking about the pace, you know, there's a lot of times where he struggled with Fiesta this year compared to Oit. You know, there's been times where Oit's really been comfortable in the car and Sebastian not so much. He's struggled with understeer and various setup issues. You know, and a lot of that could potentially be down to the fact that he signed up to M Sport so late last year and, you know, maybe didn't get the preparation that he wanted in terms of getting ready for this year. And the other thing to consider is these cars are new to all the drivers, so it's going to be a bedding in period. But I think next year we've got OJ, you know, I think he's known for probably a little while that he's going to be back with M Sport, and I think their preparation will be better next year for moving forward. And, you know, Ford's sort of increased involvement, you know, bearing in mind at the minute this isn't a, you know, a Ford manufacturer's effort. This is just an increase in Ford support for M Sport and the WRC. With that in mind, the preparation and the testing should be better next year. So, you know, it's worrying moving forward, but also we saw how strong Hyundai were in Australia and Citroën showing signs that they can bounce back as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think we're in the same position we were last year, where we're not really sure what's going to happen at the start of next year.
Trev, where do you see perhaps Seb's, you know, it was a little bit rushed. We've all commented on that, obviously getting into the car for 2017 and everything else. Where do you see the changes for Seb, other than obviously wanting more performance, which is, you know, hopefully what, you know, Ford's increased involvement. It's still very, very open-ended, that statement, isn't it? But where do you see his preparation changing? Is it the fact now he's got a year's worth of data in that car and he can go back and review it with Julian? Or how would you work it?
Yeah, there's a bit of that, of course. I think the key is more testing and development time. That's what he wanted to get from Ford, from what I can see reading between the lines. I don't personally think that Ford are going to come back as a manufacturer, but that commitment, either whether it's a financial contribution towards wages, but the most important thing was to get the testing and development side of things done. I don't think he was arriving in the rallies in 2017 with the best setup in the car. A couple of times he found a sweet spot. The one in particular is Portugal, where, you know, he went out and he was the Seb that we've known from years. A brand new car in that event, well, that made a difference or not, I'm not sure, but he certainly found the sweet spot. He was struggling, trying to get the balance right between traction and getting the car to turn in before that. But there were very few times, I think, in 2017 where he was totally happy with the car like that. But not only him, of course, the other drivers and the other teams But it's rare you see that from Sebastian Ogier. So I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to get into the car and be able to drive as fast as he can. And that was a big push to get that amount of technical involvement, to get the test and development budget pushed up a little bit so we can fine-tune that car. Plus, you know, the other teams are going to go forward. I didn't realise as well, just to change the subject slightly, Neuville was in a 2018 spec car for Rally GB and Australia. So maybe explain some of the speed. If you remember right the way back to the first day of GB, apart from the very first stage, the rest of the rally, it was highly, highly competitive and the car was reliable. So they've certainly seemed to have upped the game a little bit, and reliability is a key thing I think that Hyundai need to work on.
It's interesting. Now, I'll come to you first, Jack, because you had a year of direct involvement with them. And we spoke about him many times. Elvin Evans, of course, who's going to be Seb's partner in crime in the M Sport team, was still undecided yet where that third car will go, whether it's going to be split over a number of drivers. Of course, a Volkswagen, Jari Matti, possibly. Well, he's even openly admitted to, you know, to the press that, you know, he always felt, you know, the Volkswagen team was built around Seb. Perhaps, you know, we know Yari's worked on certain things to try and get him going and things like that. How do you see Elvin having spoke to him, having dealt with him, having seen him grow, Jack, over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years? Obviously, that year in BRC, you were there with him covering the events. How do you see someone like Elvin, you know, stepping up and being, you know, a teammate, you know, a direct teammate, if you like, as opposed to a DMAC car in 2018?
I think it's exactly what Elvin wants. He's a competitive driver who, you know, he is similar to Sebastian in so many ways in terms of how competitive they are. And he'll want the same tyres, the same car, the same equipment, same number of mechanics and the same test days that Sebastian has. And I'm sure he'll get that. That's what Tanak's had this year. So from that point of view, I think that's a positive. The other big thing for me is that the Ogier and Evans have similar driving styles, which is a massive thing when you're developing a rally car, because as we've seen this year, Hayden Paddon, who's got a bit of a different style to Thierry Neuville, has really suffered. And I really do think that's a major part of Hayden Paddon's sort of difficulty that he's had this year is that he drives the car a lot differently to Thierry Neuville, and the car's been clearly developed for Thierry or at least heavily with Thierry. So I think the fact that Sebastian Ogier and Elvin Evans drive similarly, they like to keep the car nice and tidy, neat, focus on the corner exit, that sort of thing, I think that can only play well into Evans' hands. And you know, what we need to remember at this point is that there's probably no better person in the WRC for test and development than Sebastian Ogier, given how many years he spent on the Polo perfecting that. You know, he was driving the Skoda Fabia for a while, wasn't he, in the WRC, but doing a lot of the testing work with Dieter Deffin and Carlos Sainz on the old Polo. So I think Elvin's only going to benefit from Sebastian sort of working with this car in terms of the setup 2017, and the competitive nature of Elvin, he'll want to be matching Ogier, and you know what a great thing it'll be for his confidence and for his reputation if he can, you know, match Ogier or even beat him on certain occasions, as Oit's done this year. We've seen him constantly yardsticked against Sebastian Ogier, and he's got a big money move to Toyota and you know, a rally driver of the year from the WRC out of it. So you know, Elvin will be hoping for something similar.
Trev, again, on one hand, this comes very much into your field. You know, we've spoke time and time again about Jari Matti and, you know, mind management and stuff like that. Do you see this as somebody in Elvin that is going to embrace this the way Jack's just been describing?
Oh, without doubt. He's going to have the best Christmas, I think, of most of them. You know, he knows that he's going to go to Monte Carlo in a car on tyres that's going to be competitive all year. We know he's quick on any surface. And he's gonna grasp it with both hands. I think in 2015, compared to Tanak that year, he was probably backing off a little bit, not pushing the same way Tanak would push until he made a mistake, whereas Elvin would hold back, not quite happy with the car, whatever, you know, what the situation was at the time. He's a bit like Craig Breen in that way, a bit like his dad as well, who would build up the speed as he went, making sure the car's right. He probably made a few too many mistakes that year. I remember he seemed to be getting a lot of punctures. So if you can avoid that, minimise the mistakes, we know that he's got the speed. We know that car, the perfect balance that he had. He was one of that car in GB. Fair enough, the tyres suited. But, you know, he'll have more events where the tyres are going to suit. And he's quick on all surfaces. As Malcolm Wilson says, you'd be wise to have a sneaky bet on him, I think.
Now, Trev, you're out of the three of us, and obviously Riseaway busy at the moment, which we've made reference to. But out of all three of us that are here, Jack's just been talking about, obviously, you know, Hayden not quite getting on with the car because it's been built around Thierry. And obviously I made reference to the fact that, you know, Yari Matti mentioned, you know, the Polo being built around Seb. They're all the same car, aren't they? Now, is it the fact that there is so many settings to change? You know, when we're saying, and it's a very, very easy throwaway line that we all make with regards to, well, the car was built for him. The cars are all exactly the same. As opposed to the layman, and I include myself in this, Trev, you've been in various testing sessions and you've sat in various world cars and stuff, you know, a few years back now, granted, but you've done it and you've done it with manufacturers and stuff like that. Just how big a difference and how big a window is this that we're dealing with? You know, we're talking tenths of seconds with regards to timing, but how big is the window that you've got for these changes that transform the car that works for Thierry to a car that works for Hayden, and, you know, a car that works for Seb, you know, i.e. the Polo back in the day, to working for Yari?
I think there's a couple of things here. Number one is the lack of time for some of the teams towards the end of last year to develop the cars and get all the drivers in so they could fine-tune what was happening, you know, make sure that the car is dialed into their particular settings. I'm with you. I don't understand. It's built around a driver. The team certainly built around a driver and engineer working better with one driver and the other, maybe better relationships. But a modern world rally car with all the different parameters on there, you can easily get it adapted to you. Now, the big challenge is being able to do it consistently and do it in a way where you're given the right feedback. You know, there's all this talk about Chris Meek engineered the Citroen this year, you know, and for this year. Chris Meek is a fantastic engineer. If you go back to 2002, 2003, I can't remember which focus it was, but he was heavily involved. He worked alongside Christian Lauriel to work that car. He's working all hours to help Christian Lauriel to develop probably one of the best Fords there was. So from an engineering brain point of view, he's great. Like his dad, who used to build rally cars that were competitive throughout the world. So that part of that I get, and being able to describe to the engineer what's actually happening is that's a key role. So whoever's good at that will get the best car. And different drivers have different experience around that. The second thing is when you add in an active center differential, then you're firing in another parameter that you can change. And of course the guys can adjust that on their steering wheel now. They can load it up or soften it off, you know, more lock or less lock on it. But when you do that, then the knock-on effect on damping, the knock-on effect on all the other parameters that can adjust roll bar settings, for example. So it's just getting the time in the car for each driver on surfaces that are indicative of each of the events they go to. That's the key. The other thing to talk about on testing is if you go out on a gravel stage, of course, and we've done this, we did a 5-test once with Vauxhall, I remember it well. And if you're on gravel tires, on a gravel stage, and the weather's changed, and every time you go up and down that stage, things change, and the parameters move all the time. So you've got to take that into consideration as well. And you get to the end of a test, and inevitably, and you come away and you think, okay, we've got a tenth of a second per kilometre there, or whatever it may be, or 2/10, and that's going to be really interesting. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really translate into the rally that way. The other thing, just one last point to make, Tony, is when you go to an event, the car is perfectly lined up. The guys spend a lot of time getting the geometry right, getting it set up, and everything's fantastic, off you go. And sometimes at the end of the first stage, a driver won't be happy that they're going to adjust the dampers. And if you go too far, then you can go even slower in the next stage. By the time you get to the service, then you're out of the picture. So that's one area that seems to happen. You go down that route and you start adjusting it. And that's where a lot of people fall down as well when they do that. And that's the key point, really, is just trying to get that balance right where everything will come together.
Jack, that's exactly how you set up a car normally, isn't it?
Very good. Yeah, that's exactly how I do it.
Yeah, I thought so. Jack, joking aside, this is setting down a marker, of course, to the rest of the WRC that M Sport are there to fight and keep their title. This third car thing, which we talk about a little bit later in the podcast, Martin Holmes and I, with regards to the other teams and their third car, but what are your takes on this? Is M Sport going to have to get a paying driver in there to prop up this whole team now?
I don't think necessarily that it's going to have to be a pay driver. I think they have to think very carefully about who they choose, because Hyundai have clearly hit a bit of a sweet spot with their drive lineup, and you know there's no doubt that you know Elvin and Sebastian can deliver good results, but that third person is going to be very important. Now, a lot of people seem to think that Teemu Suninen is the favourite to go into that role, and you know for most part I think that's a fair shout. He's done a very good job in WRC2, and you know, seen him perform many times in person and been very impressed with him. But the worry there is he's someone who's not done a lot of the far away events and not managed to recce some of the events, so he's in the kind of position that Ezepekka Lappi was in last year, where he not quite as experienced, shown good pace, but is he going to be a consistent sort of threat for the constructors' points, which is what Malcolm's going to be wanting? And someone more experienced in that role might be better for him. Now his options are quite limited in who he can actually go for, but his drive lineup last year appeared quite sort of maybe not brave, but you know, Elvin, Oit and Sebastian was a strong lineup, but I think throwing Teemu in there would be brave. But I think he's a quick driver, and I think he's probably the best choice for the job, I'd say.
I've got a theory, and I mentioned this name a bit later on in the podcast. Just a short answer, Trev. Have you got a theory of being third car?
Well, I think it could be shared between Suninen and Tiedemann.
I've got a theory, boys, and you may laugh, but
you're going to say Juho Hannan, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say Mads Osberg.
Okay.
And I'm going to say Mads Osberg. He's 30 years old. He sold his own World Rally car, or it's certainly for sale at the moment. I know, because I've asked Father Christmas for it. And he has been a consistent point scorer on all rounds of the WRC for probably the last 10 years.
So yeah, he fits Malcolm's bill of being sacked off and then coming back, doesn't he, really?
Yeah. And, you know, he'll probably
maybe sacked off isn't fair, but, you know.
No, but he may well have a little bit of budget, not probably all the budget, so it could fit that way. And he knows the team know him, and he will go out and he will constantly score points.
In defence of your argument, he's put in some very strong stage times this year, and you know he's had a bit of bad luck in that car, and also very little test mileage, and being really the kind of the trailblazer for a privateer 2017 car, hasn't he? Really, as much as he's not a privateer in a sort of a performance sense, in a literal sense, he was the kind of trailblazer for that. So, yeah, I think he put in a very a couple of very good performances. I remember a few stage times where he's been in the top three and been pretty impressive this year. So he would definitely be an option for Malcolm, I think, looking at next year.
Trev, it may sound a bit left field, but as I say, I think he ticks all the boxes. Now, there's an argument, of course, that, you know, up until a couple of years ago, and we talk more about this in the podcast, a bit later on in the podcast, but, you know, this third car was supposedly for a junior driver and stuff like that. I think that ship personally is sailed now with these 2017 cars. I think Ezepekka was perhaps perhaps brought in, and that was definitely against the run of the mill of all the other teams. Of having this junior driver come in, that rule or that argument seems to have gone quiet now. So would you not just go out and get a guaranteed point scorer who might be prepared to bring a little bit of budget to the team?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense to me. If Suninen, what I can gather, Jockey's already said that Suninen will be out in at least six rallies. You'd imagine those will be gravel rallies, certainly snow rally, maybe in Sweden as well. So if you've got him in those, then probably the weak area will be on the tarmac events. So as a third driver, who would you get in to take over in the tarmac events then?
I don't know, let's be honest with you, M Sport, the way the company is structured, it wouldn't be a big ask for them to run a fourth car, would it? For Teemu Suninen, he can come in and do six rounds. You've got a point scorer in the third car, let's call it what was the DMAC car, if you like. And you've got, Teemu Suninen coming in, with Timo Jokke renting the car for him for those six rounds. To me, and I'm no WRC expert and I'm no WRC boss, but to me, in order to retain your manufacturers, even though Jack called it constructors before, we'll let it go. It's not F1. In order to keep the manufacturers, it kind of ticks all the boxes. You know, there isn't a lot of experience out there, is there? And let's be honest, outside of all the drivers now, there's only one driver with 17, or two drivers, suppose you put Johan in there, of 17 cars, and that's Madsen Yuo.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Well done.
Thanks. That's the end of the podcast, folks. Thanks a lot for joining.
No, it is. It's a fair point. Because the deal with Sunrun could just be purely commercial. We know Finland can attract a lot of commercial sponsors because of their own program that goes out at prime time, where we in the UK got the one show that'll present the rally program. So they've got a big commercial opportunity there, and it's the second biggest sport in the country. So that could be just a commercial deal. But obviously, if he's doing the rallies, may as well take use of the points as well if you have him as the third driver. Osberg, definitely. And as Jack was saying, he was setting competitive times again this year in some of the outings. He did have a lot of issues with the car, but that's probably down to not being able to set it up properly. And of course, if you remember in GB, where he had big issues, there was an electronic gremlin got into the car where the diff was open, the center diff was open and closing at will, made the car dangerous. So, yeah, if they can incorporate that into the M Sport team the way he used to run, then maybe something like that would work.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Anyway, boys, there's another Seb who you may remember. I think he won a few world championships. I think it was 9. Was back out in possibly one of my favourite F2 cars ever at the weekend. Jack Benyon, have you come down yet from the dizzy heights of excitement?
I don't think I can talk about this.
No?
I might explode.
Self-combust.
Yeah. I've watched some onboards. My 6-week-old son is even watching with the onboards with me. I had to get him on watching them. I said, this is the first onboard you're going to watch, son, and you're going to watch the best car on tarmac, best F2 car on tarmac, with the best driver on tarmac in my generation. And he fell asleep. But I didn't. And it was, you know, the times, I suppose. I'll be honest with you, right? I'll come to you in a sec, Trev. Jack, the times for me really didn't matter, even though it turned out that Seb was more than competitive against R5 cars and everything else. It just didn't matter. Just to see one of those things pedal properly was just phenomenal.
It's everything that is good about rallying, isn't it? It's an F2 car. It's out there. It's wacky. It's outrageous. It screams. It's just a incredible piece of kit that looks like your standard take it to the supermarket kind of job, and that was definitely not driven like it was going to the supermarket, I'll tell you that much. It's just my favourite video I shared, you know how much I love onboard, Tony. I'm sure the listeners have heard me bang on about onboard for a long time. My favourite video from Rally Davao, which is where this took place, was the night stage video, which I shared on Twitter, where you can't see anything and you barely even see the lights, but you can just hear this thing coming out of nowhere. And to me, the sound of the thing alone is enough to get you excited. But yeah, he's again, like he has done on other previous French rallies that he's done in this car, he was beating a WRC car, a Ford Fiesta. He was beating R5s, all sorts of stuff in this front wheel drive. A 306 Maxi, which is my understanding that it's kind of it's the last generation of the 306s, and it's got all the upgrades that the last 306 had, but it's built to spec. It's not got some crazy engine in there or anything like that. It's been built to be exactly like the 306 Maxi, because Sebastian was a huge fan and obviously couldn't drive one at the time that they were around because he was contracted to Citroën. So he, as soon as he signed for Peugeot, he tasked a company to build this car for him back to spec. So to be beating a WRC car is incredible, isn't it? And the engine blew up while it was leading, which was heartbreaking, but we just got enough footage out of it to make it worthwhile.
Jack, you do realize, right, out of the three of us, there's a man that spent quite a lot of time in an F2 car.
I realize that.
Do you think we should ask him, Trev? Do you know when you were sat in F2 cars?
Yeah,
right. Did you realise that maybe in 20 years on, these kind of lunatic pocket rockets that were based on kind of hot hatches to some degree were still going to be spoke about? Did they have that feeling to them?
Oh, they're just incredible cars. Were, you know, some of the best years rallying were those 2 years as the Vauxhall team with Neil Wearden and the battles that we had in the BRC. But again, if you're stood on the banks watching and listening to us, certainly at night, and the Jim Clark rally up in Dunns, and you could see the lights, you could hear the noise, this thing coming across the moors. It's just incredible. Everybody is, you know, so excited about it. And we know Craig Breen has been on the show a few times talking about it. And just special time in rally, and I was lucky to be involved to a good degree in it. This 306 was just incredible, wasn't it? It's a 21-year-old car, I remember. And the fact that he had Daniel Elena beside him as well instead of his wife, he usually takes her on jaunts like this, meant that they were going for it, they were having a crack at it. And I think it was quite amusing what Daniel Elena said on Twitter. He said, "With no regrets, we give it everything, even our pistons." And that was a great quote. I like that one.
Absolutely. I hope we see more of it. And again, I keep coming back to this. And Jack, I think you're with me. I don't know where you are with this, Trev, but I want to see Seb doing this stuff. I don't want to see Seb back in WRC.
I agree.
Jack?
Yeah, well, you don't need to ask me, do you? You know the answer.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you.
I know. Yeah, and that's where I want to be. I want to see this stuff. I don't want to see him in a current world car. I really don't. I want to see him out in his 306 doing stuff like this.
This is why I think in 10 or 15 years' time, the rallying community is really going to realise how cool Sebastian Loeb actually is. Because at the point where he was dominating, it was getting a bit boring for the fans and stuff. And, you know, it's always difficult when the same person's winning every year, isn't it? But when people have got the time to reflect in a few years' time on just how good he was, and also how much fever he's got. Like, how many of the current WRC drivers would buy a 306 Maxi and go and rally it around France? I mean, Yari Matti is probably the kind of person who would do that. In fact, he's definitely the kind of person who would do that. But I'm not sure how many of the, you know, the current WRC crop would do this kind of thing. And I think people don't realise how much Sebastian actually loves the sport. And I think that'll be reflected in a few years' time.
And some Pike's Peak still to come as well, Jack. What's he doing on that one?
He's bought the car that he broke the record in, hasn't he? But he's not confirmed whether he's going to do the Pike's Peaks again. I'd like to see him do that again, because that was another one.
I would prefer him to basically turn it into an Uber cab. I'd like him to sign up to Uber and just turn up in it, just for a giggle. Mm. Just for a giggle. Anyway,
do you know on Rally Dakar that Gilles Panizzi and Francois Delacour were competing as well?
I did, and Francois Delacour still scares me, even from this distance. And I briefly bumped into him on Monte Carlo the other year. And I really wanted to talk to him, and I don't get kind of phased. I can talk to anybody. And I went to speak to him, and it just didn't happen. I just kind of froze. And I don't know whether froze because he just stared at me with his frozen eyes, but I just froze.
Did you see what he was driving?
It was at the Aston.
Yeah, an Aston Martin Bait Vantage GT4. What on earth was he doing in that?
Why not? Because he can.
Exactly.
And the thing is, what I love about Francois Delacour, right, is that he went into that rally in that car thinking, I fancy my chances here. There's no doubt in my head that he didn't go into that rally thinking he fancied his chances.
Well, he's going to have a crack at Romain Dumas in the 911 GT3, no doubt, in the GT class. That's definitely what he was up for. Panizzi is probably more scary for me than Delacour.
Well, a pair of them together, I'm sure they're friends now, but again, Panizzi, I would have loved seeing Panizzi. I bet you Panizzi was one of the first people over to have a look at that 306, Jack.
Yeah, and definitely.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him in something like that.
One of my favourite videos is the Panizzi video of him in an onboard in 306 Maxi in the wet in a rally in southern France, and it's got the wooden gear knob which Sebastian Loeb has put in his, which I'm very happy about. That's a very synonymous thing with the 306 Maxi, to have that weird kind of wooden gear shift in there. But also there's an inward looking camera, and you can see like the breathing exercise.
It's like he's given birth.
Yeah, he has a real strange breathing system that he has going on inside the car. It's really weird.
Panizzi was our teammate in 2001, Tony, when Neil Weirden and I were in the Grafoni 206. So
of course, yeah.
On the gravel rounds, Panizzi was with us in the team, and on the tarmac rounds, it was Harry Rovanpera. So two-car team. But I remember going to watch the shakedown in Finland with Panizzi. So everything he does outside of the car, he does flat out as well. So trying to keep up with him walking through the force, I think it was Ruud Mackey as a stage. He's just flat out everywhere. And all the gestures. So stood beside him watching the shakedown stage as the cars come over. And you can imagine all the hand gestures and everything. There was one other time in New Zealand when we'd finished the recce for the day, and Herb got in to drive him back, and literally before we took off, he had fell out with somebody on the road. We were giving each other hand gestures literally before we took off from the end of the recce, and went back that night, and Neil Weirden went for a run with him, and he said, never again. He says, absolutely flat out. He sprinted away, and Neil said, well, I said, I'm not going to run that fast. That'll kill me. So hilarious.
I love it. A couple of things, guys, I want to talk about before we move on. Jack, you've wrote a nice piece this week. We made reference to it, of course, last week with regards to the fatal accident inquiry. If you just want to kind of just sum up kind of what you put in your article there for our listeners overseas. Again, this is something which people are still very passionate about across in all corners of the world, of course.
Yeah, it's difficult to talk about this in a short period of time, isn't it? Yeah, like I said last week, we had a fatal accident inquiry into the deaths on the Snowman Rally in 2013 and the Jim Clark Rally in 2014. So the sheriff who's conducting the fatal accident inquiry has released his report. So in MN this week, I've tried to sort of explain what that means for rallying moving forward, and spoke to some sort of influential people within rallying to kind of get their thoughts. And I think the overriding kind of mood at the minute is that this is positive. All the investigations are over and we can start to move forward now. Scotland can work on getting some sort of legislation through their parliament to allow closed road rallying in the same way that England will, so that we don't have to have a law passed in order to have a closed road rally. It will be down to the MSA, the body responsible for governing the sport in the UK, and also the council to decide what events get closed road access. So yeah, good that all the investigations are over now and Scottish rallying can kind of reset, move forward, and the Jim Clark and the Mull Rally are very keen to get some legislation through Scottish government. So it's just going to be a guessing game now as to how long that's going to take, and they can aim to sort of come back hopefully in 2019 and 2020 with a bit of luck.
I think you've just kind of half answered the question there. I was just going to say, do you think we're going to see? I'm sat now and I'm looking at a picture of me on Jim Clark 6 years ago. I think it is that picture. Yeah. Do you think we're going to see the Jim Clark again?
Yeah, I think we'll see the Jim Clark again. I spoke to for the piece. I spoke to Russell Blood, who's been the Clark of the course of the Jim Clark Rally, and they want to organise an event for next year, which I think is very ambitious. But I think there's appetite there from the organisers, and there's appetite from the local council. So although I think they will, I think there's a bit of a hint in your question there that you're a bit sort of nervous about the event moving forward, and I think a lot of people are as well. I think a lot of people share your kind of view. There's always a worry when events don't go ahead that it's difficult to bring them back. There's a lot of work that needs to be done with the local council and all the residents and things like this. There's a lot that goes into organizing a closed road stage rally, but I think there's appetite from the organizers, like I said, and the councils, and I've got no doubts they'll have some problems moving forward, but the big question is, when can the Scottish government get the legislation through? Because until that happens, we won't see any closed road rallying in Scotland.
Trev, you did it in its halcyon days. You did it, I think, probably in the best days, in my personal opinion, the F2 days in the dark, going through the night and stuff like that. The Jim Clark rally I did was very, very different over the years I've done it, but it was still, a great closed road rally to do. It's one that I was very passionate about. It's hard to explain whether it's just the concept that it is closed road rally and why it's a special event. You've done it many, many times. I suppose for our listeners, what's the best way of summing up Jim Clark?
I think it's just the roads are really good. Having cut my teeth in Ireland, we had plenty of tarmac rallying over there. And I remember the first time it was used, Renault went there, and I meant to go and have a look at it, but I wasn't able to do it so at the time. But certainly from the roads and the speed of some of the roads was fantastic. the challenge is always there, because particularly two stages that I can think of where there's a lot of shiny tarmac and on a wet road it was decidedly tricky. I love the night stages, you know, we've talked about those before. And I hope it comes back. On the back of what we were just saying about Jack, I just want to congratulate him on writing the piece, which was very well balanced, very reflective on everybody involved in it. And, you know, when you look at inquiries like this, if you put yourself in the families of the people who died, is this a positive thing going forward? And I think it answers a lot of the questions that they're probably going to ask. And I think from what I've read on Jack's piece, when I read it this morning, I haven't read the report, but I think we're in a good place and heading forward with the right amount of learning. Just picking up on the organiser side of things, which again, Jack mentioned in the report, having been an organiser for 20 odd years of events in Ireland, I just still think there are far too many of them, and it's down to the motor clubs to pick their best or two or three favourite events and run those really well, and just maybe reduce the amount of events that are on the calendar. I know there are challenges around that, and everybody's got their own priorities and preferences when it comes to rallying, but we need to be running rallies that are ultra-safe, or as safe as we can have them. That means we need to reduce the amount that we do in order to get the volunteers there. Then I think that's the right approach.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. A couple of other things before we go to our any other businesses, because we've got a themed any other business this week. Never done it before, but there's a theme to it, and we'll come to that in a second. Jack, we briefly spoke about R4 last week. I read David Evans' excellent piece as ever, and I think David's still in the same place as what we all are. I still don't get it. Still don't understand it. Still don't see the point of it.
I can see the point of it, but I can't see the point of it costing so much. How does that work? Does that sum it up for you?
Yeah. There you go.
That's the idea. I like having something underneath R5 that can work in different continents and has different sort of. It can be applied in different ways. I don't like the fact that it costs the same amount as a second-hand R5 car. I think that's bizarre.
I couldn't agree more. Trev, to sum it up briefly.
Yeah, we've done the same, but I quite like what David Evans finished the article with. He said, once we get there, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's taken by the prospect of a four-wheel drive, 270 brake horsepower, Fiat 500.
Yeah, very, very well finished. Jack, you were at the BRC Awards of the weekend.
I was indeed.
A fun night by all. Is there any drunken gossip that you can reveal to us before we move on?
It was a good night. Start. It was the first time they've done that since the BRC's come back. Had a proper annual awards dinner. Guests on the stage. They interviewed Stuart Turner, Russell Brooks, Jimmy McRae, Nick Grist, Malcolm Wilson, Harry Vatanen. Apologies if I've missed anyone out there. Mark Higgins. And David Richards, there you go, that's the lot. They were all interviewed on stage, which was very entertaining. But the best story from the night was an award given to William Crichton and Liam Regan, who finished second in the Prestone Motorsport News Junior British Rally Championship. There we go. They were both given a watch.
Well done.
Because a Prestone prize winner had won the prize of sitting with William in his Peugeot 208 R2 on the Shakedown for Wales Rally GB. And the gent in question didn't have fireproof underwear, and the FIA scrutineer wasn't very happy with that and said that you're not going out in the car. So Liam, the co-driver, stripped down, gave the Prestone Prize guest his fireproof underwear, and the guy got out of his life. So I thought that was a really nice story and very nice of Liam, who's a top man. So yeah, well done.
Did he get his underwear back?
He had to walk around in, he had to be piggybacked around the stage start because he'd given his boots away as well, because he needed FIA homologated boots. So
of course, the
poor lad was, Liam was on a, he was being piggybacked around, but got his boots and his underwear back, so that was good.
There you go. Any other business this week, folks? On the Jack Bengian and MN put something out the other day with regards to Andreas Vias Boas, who you may or may not know. He was a football coach. He then went on to manage Chelsea, and then he went on to manage Spurs. And then Spark at Moscow, I think it was, or something like that. But he's entered in the Dakar Rally. And it got me thinking. It got me thinking of unusual people that perhaps we wouldn't expect to see in a rally car, doing a rally or being in a rally car. So I tasked the boys last night before we recorded this, saying, right, boys, find me your best ones. So we're going to do our best roundup of unlikely people, I guess, in a rally car. Jack Bengian?
I've got two. And I'm going to say who they are, and I'm not going to say a single word more about them.
Go.
Joe Brand.
Ah, I got that one.
And Jimmy Savile.
I think you need to say more.
I've checked with my lawyers, and they suggest that I don't talk about this topic any further.
Okay. Did you ever write to Jimmy, just as a matter of interest?
No, Jim has never fixed anything for me.
No, okay, just checking. I asked to meet Rolf Harris when I wrote to him. Trev?
I think Mark Thatcher, who was the son of Margaret Thatcher at the time, when he did Paris-Dakar and got lost in the desert, was a big issue. You remember that?
Yeah.
The other one was Idris Elba, who competed on the Circuit of Arran Rally a couple of years ago with Michael Orr on the notes.
Trev, I've got to pick you up on that one.
Why?
Right. Because he didn't compete. It was a nonsense. There was one car in that rally. It was almost like they'd done a special rally just for him for that programme.
And?
Do we know whose car that was?
It was Gus Greensmith.
There you go. Friend of the show, Gus Greensmith. Hello, Gus.
Yeah. Hi, Gus. Yeah, so he didn't really compete on it, did he?
Well, he did have a permit. He competed in his own rally. So he did compete.
Yeah. Okay,
but
all right.
He was in another one. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. How do we get mortal interest in rallying? Well, you get personalities who are known worldwide to get involved in it. On the back of that, then we can exploit rallying.
Do you want me to tell you what? I'll tell you two now. Okay. Joe Brand one, I had that one as well. And a similar time, we had Barry McGuigan.
Yep. I picked up the bumper from his car in the Ulster Rally. It was a Sierra Cod. I can't remember what year it was, Tony, but I picked up. He knocked the front bumper off in the corner of his stand, so I picked it up and brought it back to him.
There you go. And the other who is, I suppose, particularly mega famous, but was very, very well known, a man from the side of the pond, as it were, Trev, it was Shane Lynch.
Yep.
Who's massively into drifting and stuff now. Of course, he was in
Boys. Of course, you'd know Primrose, who's the drummer of Travis. He's a huge rally fan.
Yeah. Now, I'll be honest. When I was doing the polos, Neil Primrose was doing the KAs. Yeah. And we used to be seated quite close together. And then he had his big off. And then the record label stopped him from rallying.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to Shane Lynch, that was during the KA series. The KA series over in the UK was huge for our listeners, by the way. I feel like I'm letting you in the conversation. Now, we've kind of excluded you a little bit. But the KA series was huge. There used to be maybe 30 KAs, back the way the 106s were and stuff like that as well. Now, they used to have a celebrity car, and Shane Lynch kind of got the celebrity car almost for the season, I think it was. It's when I think even Guy Wilkes was doing the KAs then as well, comes to think of it. And I can remember going to a stage end. I was doing management for the team. And I think it was Sunseeker, maybe, in 98, something like that. And I can remember being at the stage end, and Shane Lynch's KA came out, and he wouldn't take his balaclava off. And there was girls there in high heels and little skirts, all at stage end, all wanting to meet him. They were the kind of sights you never normally see at a rally. That's all I'll say.
Getting young people involved in the sport, Tony, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
I don't think they were looking to get involved in the sport, Trev. I think we need to be slightly clearer on that.
I think it was probably Shane Lynch who was looking to get involved in the sport.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, absolutely. And back to Jimmy Savile, Jack. Can you just tell us what he was actually doing in a rally car? Because I've heard this one, but I don't actually know what he was doing in a rally car.
Can I have some... I think it was... I think he co-drove in an Escort Mexico. And he did the RAT rally when it was still the Daily Mirror RAC rally. I reckon it would have been 72 or 73, maybe. It was early 70s, and he co-drove for Jill Robinson.
There you go. Folks, if you don't know who Jimmy Savile is, good for you. Boys, believe it or not, that we're well over time. We're at the end of that. We've still no idea how Ryan's getting on. We were hoping to grab Ryan this week, but it's clearly not going to happen. But, boys, that's it for this week for you guys. We're going to have a little break, and then we're going to cross over to Martin Holmes. Trev, are you around next week?
Yeah, I should be able to do it.
Okay, Jack, you'll be here as well, won't you?
Yes, I'm looking forward to next week?
I think we should have a bit of I think we should just grill Ryan, the three of us, basically.
Do you know what? All jokes aside, it's been absolutely fantastic to see a driver embracing a bit of social media and giving updates from an event that none of us would probably know much about if it wasn't for him. And the event's been quite good, in fairness, with its Facebook page and its Twitter. But Ryan's updates have been fantastic. I can say that because I know he's not here, so I don't feel like.
I've been texting Ryan. We've had sort of brief chats via text, and I pointed out, by the way, what you said last week.
Jack. Oh, did you? What did he say?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll have a chat when he gets
back. That's why he hasn't texted me back then, I guess.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, I think I'm with Jack. You know, the performance of the two of them in this rally has been incredible. You know, I don't think anybody's won this rally apart from world champions or Kenyan people. Certainly not a crew from Yorkshire have won it before. So, fair play. They've judged it right up until the mud hole potentially this morning. We don't know about that. We know he disappeared into the mud hole. And we know he didn't come out of the stage when he's supposed to come out of it, but we'll find out the detail on that later. And because we've been so praiseworthy, we can maybe edit this bit out, can't we?
Yeah, of course we can. Boys, we will speak next week, folks. We're going to go to a little break, and I'll be back with Martin Holmes.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. It's always good to welcome back Martin Holmes. Martin hasn't, I think Martin's been on most seasons now. But welcome back to Absolute Rally anyway, Martin.
Hi, hope things are going well with you.
Things are good. Things are really good. Obviously, we've just got to the end of potentially, I would say, the most exciting WRC season for about 20 years.
I wouldn't say 20 years. I'd say for as long as we've had a world championship. I don't think there's been any type of championship as interesting and as meaningful as the one we've just had. And I hope the result of this phone call is that other people will realise just what a good year we've had and where we're going in the future.
That's kind of reassuring to hear from you. With the greatest respect, you've been around a little bit longer than me, and sometimes we all look back through rosy-coloured spectacles of certain eras of WRC, and you know, I wasn't too sure whether just because it was a recent time, i.e. the last 12 months, was it so good? You know, people always kind of make reference, I guess, to Group B, and then we look at the Group A days when Group A really got going with the likes of Colin and Subaru and then Tommy in the Mitsubishi and things like that. You know, I wasn't sure whether we were on a similar plane to that, but you're saying that we were.
Yeah, I mean, it's the usual deception. Yeah, if you're a magazine and you get people to vote who is the favourite rally driver of all time, they'll mention the latest one because they're the ones that they know. They haven't got a standpoint to talk about anything else. But anyway, I hope we can go through a few things which it's interesting. I've just done a column for Pace Notes magazine in which we talked about all the special things that have cropped up this year. And I think a lot of them are not fully realised. I mean, there are things like we know clearly. Well, everybody knows that each team had at least one win in the season, which, of course, is something pretty special. But what is really special is the very first year there's been a rule change where everybody has been at the first event with a brand new car. And I think that is something pretty special as far as rallying is concerned.
Do you think the level playing field that it gave us, do you think that added to the spectacle, or did that just mix it up in general?
Well, the current philosophy in regulations is to make rally cars essentially stereotyped, good or bad, but it is the case. And you know, nowadays, you can tell the identity of a car only by looking from 100 metres, only by looking at the colour of the car. In the old days, you could tell the identity of the car by its shape. Now, from 100 metres. Now, that's all different. But what you do have is the fact that all the teams got a good equivalence in their performance straight away, which I think was really quite remarkable. You know, we keep on thinking those older Group B days, but of course in those days the regulations did not stereotype the design. It gave vent to any type of design that you wanted, whether it's could be four-wheel drive, two-wheel drive, it could be turbocharged, it could be normally, it could be four cylinders, it could be six cylinders, it could be many different things. Five cylinders, of course, with Audi. Now, of course, we're dealing with something quite different.
I think for me, I think the other thing that pretty much all the teams had winners, and what I mean is by that is we had, for the first time in a long time, it felt like we had number one drivers. And I'm a big advocate, by the way, of number two drivers, and I don't mean that in the bad sense. What I mean is I always believe that teams need to have team members, and we've always had historically really, really good number two drivers. When I think back to the late 90s and things like that, possibly early 2000s. But we've now got teams, you know, again, works teams. Okay, we'll put M Sport under that just for the sake of this point. We've got works teams with proper number one drivers and not necessarily paying drivers.
Oh, up to a point, except when we think about Mr. Meek, it's the most unusual situation when Mr. Meek finished up the best driver at the end of the year and the team he's in. But then, so that's just by the by. I don't want to talk about him this time. But what I do like is the fact that it's been 15 years since as many as seven different drivers have scored World Championship Rally wins. That's not quite what you were saying. It shows that there's a lot of people out there, not just the one driver from each team, total four, who have a chance of success. Other drivers do as well.
Do we think our new world champion, or, you know, our five-time world champion, do you think even he thought it was possible at the beginning of the year, stepping aboard that Fiesta for the first time? Obviously, we know he likes to prepare and things like that. It was, I suppose, a bit rushed, you know, Volkswagen's announcement.
Oh, just a bit.
Yeah.
Yes, of course he didn't think so. I mean, but then the one thing he knew is that everybody was different and everybody had different challenges and everybody's looking at things in a different way. And everybody, I mean, when you realize Ford surely had the least amount of pre-rally testing of the four different teams. Mm. When I say Ford, I meant M Sports.
So. No. I completely get what you mean. Now, I suppose M Sport doing what they've done, and you know, we know Seb, his course is re-signed, and there's some, you know, there's various things come out that, you know, Ford are going to increase their involvement, but it doesn't say they're coming back as a works team. It's in fact, it's probably one of the more open-ended statements I think I've read by many people, that nobody really truly knows what Ford's more involvement is. It just knows that whatever it is, they've secured Seb for year two. Do you see Ford coming back full-time?
I'd like to think so. I think the idea of M Sport being a manufacturing champion is a little bit not quite what the FIA had originally in mind.
Yeah.
Not when it comes to the sincerity of the sport and the wish for the hierarchy in the sport to make sure that they attract all the big names, manufacturing names, and the manufacturing countries into the sport. It isn't quite what everybody had in mind, although it was jolly good that they were champion.
No, I thought it was fantastic. I suppose, you know, on a smaller scale, you know, M Sport are a car manufacturer that, you know, that's, you know, you think about the number of R5 cars they turn around, the number of R2 cars they turn around, and obviously, you know, okay, there isn't a lot of private current 2017 WRC cars knocking about, but certainly the older generation WRC cars, you know, they produce those, of course, up at Dovenby. You know, they're turning out a fair number of cars. Okay, nowhere anywhere near what Toyota or what high-end I do, of course, or indeed Citroen. But, you know, I suppose they are the smallest car manufacturer, I guess, in the UK.
No, I really don't know, because you've got all the sports cars manufacturers. No, I have no idea about them.
True, but anyway, moving on. Obviously for 2018, I suppose they've ticked all the boxes this year. 2018, obviously, Seb's agreed to stay. We don't know what the stipulations of the deal are, and I don't think we ever will. Plenty of people speculate, of course, on it. But where do you see M Sport being able to move forward, having Seb for year two, with Seb actually having, I suppose, his downtime and then his testing time before Monty?
I think that they can move forward if everything is as we hope it will be, with a confidence, which when they went into 17, they were really taking a risk, commercial risk, and everything for themselves, and they just didn't want to give up what is dear to their heart. Now, if Ford's help is real, then I hope that they have more confidence. Like, one of the things which M Sport never really had much chance to do was further develop the 2017 car. Now, this, of course, the opportunity for developing cars as the season goes by was one of the worries which Ogier had himself personally. And I hope his signing to go back to M Sport rather than to retire from the sport altogether is indication that we can look forward to new and developing things at M Sport. But, of course, we don't know.
The mischievous part of me, Mark, wants to ask you about this. It did come down to, by the sounds of things, retirement or indeed end of the year with M Sport. Do you think if Citroën would have paid supposedly what was being, you know, what he wanted or what he asked for, do you think that would have been an easy move back for him, back to Citroën, and, you know, finishing where it all began?
Well, going back to the big argument he had before he left in the first place, and obviously there's so many question marks now about everything to do with to do with Citroën Racing. We don't really know how to view the future of Citroën Racing. Hopefully, their promises about things being better for 2018 will come true, but we don't know that's the case.
Very much so, very much so. Elvin, of course, now being promoted up from the DMAC car up to the number two car for alongside Seb, obviously very much deserved, I think. And, I predict good things. And I would have said that without the GB win for him, to be honest with you. I just think he's gone about his business in such a way, as, you know, along with Dan as well. Dan, you know, got a lot of time for, well, I've known him for a long time too. But I think they've just gone about the business in such a methodical, calm manner. I would have said good things, you know, for 2018 for him prior to the GB win. But the GB win was a bit special.
I think that we saw a different, new, really much more mature Evans right from the start of the season, and it's gone through the year, and I think that has been a delight to see going on. But I think sometimes we don't realise just how well Elvin has done this year. Now, I see that we've been doing a little bit of calculations. Like, for example, the number of fastest times that Elvin had during the course of the year. And this is something that I don't think DMAC have done very much to promote the awareness. He had 27 fastest times by our calculation, which is five more than the world champion.
Wow.
On Michelin's. Now, all right, we had... Neuville had 56, and there were 30 for Tanak, the 27 was equal also with Latvala. But I think that's something pretty special. Now, we know in the case of Ogier, he was suffering from this whole starting order, running order, day one running order situation. And I think we also had a new mature Ogier, because we didn't really hear him moaning very much this year. That was, quite good, wasn't it?
It was, do you know what? We said this at the beginning of the year, and I've said it to Rich Milner a couple of times when we've had Rich on and a couple of other people who I know around M-Sport. But I think Seb has kind of got a new fan base this year by simply just driving for M-Sport. Whether M-Sport
being in a nicer environment, maybe.
It's not quite. I guess it's not quite as cold and as calculated. And I'm only kind of, you know, I'm massively generalising here on a German team, of course, being Volkswagen. But you know, we often joke about M-Sport that it is the family team. 5 degrees of separation. If you know somebody in rallying, I guarantee they will know somebody who's worked in M-Sport or is working in M-Sport, and it does have that vibe, doesn't it?
Now, thinking about Evans again, I think we calculated that Neuville led for 50 stages on the championship, 40 for Tanak, Meek for 39, and Evans for 37. Ogier only led for 14. Now, doesn't this say something special about Ogier? He just knows how to calm himself down and deliver when it really matters. I think if Ogier was to be acknowledged as one of the greatest champions we have ever had, and I think that ability to, let's say, win from behind is one of the most impressive things I've seen.
I guess it's discipline, isn't it? It's discipline of a champion.
Yeah,
it's, as you say, it is a great story. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, and which is something which I know you're obviously a little bit passionate about, we spoke about M-Sport and, you know, I guess the other teams, Citroën we've already alluded to. Where are we at, I guess, with Toyota moving forward with Jari Matti and, of course, Oit now joining him, obviously with Esko Pekka Lappi as well. And then, obviously, we've got Hyundai, and Hyundai have got, you know, musical chairs in their third car. Is the third car going to be that important this year? And the other reason why I asked that is, before we move away from M-Sport, is we still don't know what's going to happen with their third car either. Is it just going to be a paying driver? Is it going to be one of the flying Finns going to come in and do 4 or 5 rounds? Is this third car going to be that important this season?
Sorry, you are speaking specifically about M-Sport generally?
No, I'm talking generally about the third car, because the third car now, it seems to be, I thought it was very important this year, and obviously what Elvin did in order to help M-Sport this year secure the manufacturer's crown. Now, next year, you know, Hyundai, for instance, are going to have seat swapping. Citroën are probably going to have seat swapping. Toyota are probably going to be fixed with their three drivers. M-Sport, I think, probably will have a paying driver. And whether it's a paying driver that is going to do all the rounds, we really, really don't know. And I've got a bit of a theory on that, which I'll come back to in a second, which I wouldn't mind running past you. But is this third car thing now, is it going to be as important as what it has been this year, clearly, for M-Sport?
Now, firstly, we haven't seen the final version of the sporting regulations for next year yet. Won't see that until World Council next month. Until you actually see that, until you then actually analyse everything that is inferred in those regulations, you don't really know. But the thought which I, on this topic, which had been going through my mind, is why Hyundai have been thinking about 4 drivers. Now, why? I don't know.
Is it to honour the contracts of the drivers that they've got?
I don't know.
That's the only thing I can think of is that, maybe it's a contract thing, but you would think, you know, Hyundai, it would be cheaper for them to negotiate out a contract with a driver and just say, you know, maybe that's what's happened with Danny Sordo. You know, he's relinquished almost his guaranteed, his guaranteed season. I think Hayden probably has done reluctantly. But
we're going through a period in which we don't really know what's going on. I mean, staying with the subject of the drivers at the moment, we had floated around for some time a very nice idea that if we are going to expand the number of drivers per team, the third driver, assuming that three is what we're talking about, should be, for example, an under-28-year-old. Now, that seemed to have disappeared, but we don't know whether it's going to be suddenly brought back again or not. But when it comes to talking about who knows what's going on, then, of course, we got recent reports about Mr. Mahonan saying things absolutely contradictory to what John Todd has been promoting. So, we really don't know what's going on.
I think we'll have already touched upon that at the beginning of the programme, but I think that some of the things that have come out from the gentleman in question with regards to length of events on GB and stuff like that, I think is going to be well trodden ground by the time we get to this point. But I think we'll stick with the drivers. I don't really want to go down that rabbit hole.
Well,
at the moment.
We don't know what is going through people's minds about policy on drivers.
Yeah.
Until we actually see the regulations in black and white, we don't know what the rules are going to say.
I've got two thoughts here. I wonder if that's why Toyota have gone down the road very, very early on of getting Esker Pekka Lappi in a car and basically saying, right, you're in the car for next year, because of course he would tick that box, and they've got the two main drivers now with Oyton and with Jari Matti. But as you say,
yes, I think that maybe they're following the policies that we've been talking about.
Maybe they've had the foresight for that. But going across, the other teams, Hyundai, I can't quite figure out, as we've just been discussing. I really don't fully understand what's going on. I don't think it's one of those things that we'll ever truly get to the bottom of. I think when we get to the end of 2018, they certainly probably won't leave themselves in that position where they're going to have to try and find homes for four drivers in three cars. I would be interested, Martin, to see whether a fourth car comes out in the European rounds. I really would. I just don't see it, though.
We still don't know whether anybody's got in mind a B team.
Yeah.
That's another option.
Yeah. Yeah, which, of course, they had Volkswagen 2, didn't they, which Andreas Mikkelsen drove in. And then, obviously, Hyundai did have, I think it was the Hyundai 2 team, because I seem to remember Thierry being demoted to it for GB last year or the year before. That concept has been there. But as you say, it has gone very, very quiet. Just as a bit of an aside to the third driver and the M Sport third driver, and just looking at what's been for sale recently, what odds would you think you get on Mads going back to M Sport in the third car?
I could think there's a lot worse things that could happen. I mean, insofar as safe pairs of hands are concerned, he does it, and he's done it for years and years. And when you think that when he has been in various teams and he's ended up at the end of a championship, better placed in the championship than the favoured drivers, I think he's got everything on his side. And what's interesting is I don't actually see very much going on announcing the fact he has just turned 30 years. I didn't realise that until recently. But I think Australia may have been the first World Championship rally in which he was beyond 20s.
Well, there you go.
So he's not old.
He's not old, no, but if I think, how old's Elvin now? Elvin's 26, is it 27?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, but fitting that criteria of coming under the 28 rule, if you had a Mads at 30, obviously, Seb at 33, then M Sport would fill that criteria if that was brought in with regards to having a driver of an age.
But they're still not quite where the original discussions were taking place, which was somebody younger than that, and give them the chance that they would never otherwise have had.
Did that come about pre-2017 cars, though? Because I think that's probably the big concern now, isn't it, is taking a youngster, and I think Toyota have been incredibly brave what they've done with Esker Pekka. I don't see many other people putting their hand up to put a guy straight from an R2 car or even an, even indeed an R5 car into a 2017 car. I think we've discussed this on the program. Perhaps now the jump from an R5 car is indeed too great to a 2017 World car.
We'll see. We can't tell.
No, very true. Very true. But we've just been speaking about, obviously, M Sport and all the other teams, but M Sport still technically a private team. Your thoughts on the privateers in WRC?
Right. I mean, Mads is the only person who's owned a 2017 World Rally car, as opposed to Bertelli and other people who've might have used them on occasions, rented them. One of the things which is relevant to this, we don't know how it's going to pan out for the year, next year, but I don't think it's going to happen, is that I'm assuming that the FIA have dumped WRC Trophy, which I think is a pity. I mean, we had the first warning that maybe WRC Trophy was doomed, was when at the end of Rally GB, we had Ogier, the driver's champion, M Sport, the manufacturer's champion, and we had Serendipitous unbeaten as the champion, as the trophy driver. Not a word was said by anybody at the FIA, which is pretty indicative. It's their way of controlling the news. They're going to dump the championship.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps I'm so cynical, but it doesn't look very promising, which I think is a shame, because, I mean, the idea of having drivers like Araji doing the championship from time to time, Prokop coming back on the odd occasion with his old car, it was lovely. Really was lovely. But anyway.
Well, Martin Prokop was, because obviously him and Mads kind of got together, didn't they? It was kind of a convenient marriage at the beginning of the season. It was kind of, it started and then kind of was disbanded maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I think it was now. It just didn't really get going. And I wonder whether that was due to the fact that Martin Prokop really didn't see any competition in bringing out his 2016 variant of a World Rally car.
Well, I'm never quite sure what Martin wants. I think Martin is going through a midlife crisis. But, I mean, he did that endurance racing and really enjoyed that. And he loved the Dakar and that type of event. I think he realized he's come to the time of life where maybe I can get on and do something else. I don't know. It started off very promisingly that there would be a two-car team, but the second 2017 car never happened. And the only time I think he drove one was a rental anyway.
Mm. I think, you know, I've heard lots of things, and it'd be unfair of me to try and even remember, because we all talked to lots of people. But I think Mads was shocked by the running costs of the 2017 car. I think the budget it took to do the events he did this year were way, 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 way in excess of what it took to run previous cars.
And I don't think he's alone. I think perhaps it's most meaningful for him and his dad. But when you look at the cost of the bodywork, it's I'm not quite sure why the rally cars need all this special bodywork. I'm not quite sure what use it really is. But anyway, that's a decision made and having to be lived with. But I mean, each team have talked about the horrendous costs of this damage.
The problem, I guess, we've had now, we've gone to such a level, I guess, you know, there's some of the numbers being banded around for a new World Rally car, 750,000, you know, just somewhere between 500,000, 750,000, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When we're blessed at the moment, as you said, right at the top there, you know, we've had probably our best season for certainly in your memory. But are these costs actually going to be the championship's undoing?
I don't know.
My concern with that, and again, I always make a few notes as we're speaking and stuff like that, and I haven't quite got there yet, but this would kind of go where I was going to go a little bit later on, was the fact that you've been around the sport for forever and a day. I think it's fair to say. I think that's a very respectful way of saying it, but you've been around World Rallying for a long, long time. You've just said it's been the best year for in your time. Okay. I just wonder what the promoter of the WRC has done with that.
I think that when you ask whether something would be the undoing of the sport, I think any undoing would be under promotion. It's the way that Australia have had a lot of shit just recently about seamless, about it was a meaningless rally. But I disagree. I think such a lot of interesting things happened there. But, I mean, the promoter did no promoting, as I understand it, in Australia. And so not so many people bothered to go up to Coffs Harbour because they didn't know it was going on. They didn't know what was happening. And I suspect that happens generally, that the promoter tends to think in the wider view, a wider thing, rather than the specific thing. I don't know, but... I do respect what the promoter's doing and things like WRC Plus and the filming is great. But I think that there's a lot deeper way that the sport can be promoted than it is being promoted.
And I guess we haven't got the magic wand, and it's very, very easy to knock the promoter. But we spoke about this. Probably last year, you and I spoke about World Rallycross, and you know, I suppose it's an unfair comparison, but I just look at what IMG do with that, and they just seem to be able to just keep generating good news, positive news, stuff coming out, and they are getting news into it, you know, not quite mainstream media, but certainly creating a buzz, and I just don't feel we've created the same buzz. On the back of a season like you've just described as the best one in your living memory?
When you talk about rallycross, I think it is a PR-promoted activity. When you talk about rallying, in my opinion, it's a genuine love of the sport. Okay. I mean, you don't go around people bumping into people whose back route going to be better or whatever is going to happen. And the people don't talk about it. We're told what to talk about. We're told what to think. We're told that something is exciting. But that's all PR generation. It's not genuine sport. Well, put it like this. That's my personal opinion. Somebody will no doubt disagree.
No. It's absolutely. Listen, you know, it's all about opinions and everything else, which is why we discuss these things. But I just wonder, you know, would an IMG... you know, there was probably a while back now, but it was spoke about IMG could have been in for WRC. What would they have done differently? And, you know, would we be in a healthier state now?
I don't know. One of the things which I admire about Formula One is Ross Brawn's job of looking at everything that's going on and saying, hey, you don't want to do that. Why don't you think about that? All in different, sort of, across the board in the sport. Well, I think that's quite positive. All right, Mr. Batches might come up with some funny ideas in Formula One, but I think generally the idea of somebody who can look across the board at Formula One is something that rallying, with this particularly the World Championship, could do well to develop. We don't have anything. We don't have anybody sitting in World Council or Commission meetings saying, hey, that's a very clever idea, but have you thought what that's going to develop? Have you thought what that's going to go, how that's going to go wrong? Have you thought that if you did something in one way, it could be much better? We don't have anybody like that. And I think when it comes to under promotion of the sport, I think that sort of thing is quite relevant.
Is there, you know, are they missing a trick? Is the tricks that used to happen in the old days that perhaps, you know, we know media has changed. Of course it's changed. But are we missing a trick? Is there something that could be pulled out that we've done in the past? Or again, do we look back at the past like I nearly did at the beginning of the podcast, but, you know, with regards to how the promotion's done and everything else, is it the rosy-coloured spectacles thing? Is it always been like this, or am I missing something?
No, I mean, it's only a few years, relatively few years, that we've had anybody pretending to be a promoter. I mean, we've had people pretending to make a lot of money out of television and that type of work, but that's not. We've had people sort of offering to promote the championship by way of selling the right to be in the championship under their control. They can recommend their event shall be included. We've had all that sort of thing, but we haven't had the current level of promotion or the opportunities to promote that we have at the moment.
Anyway, I'm sure we could go round and round in circles. I want to
the one thing we haven't talked anything about is Australia, because so many different things happen. We've had so much negative comment about Coffs Harbour, which I can actually understand and I think. But things were quite interesting in Coffs Harbour. Things like the opportunities that other people had, which never get talked about. Things like MRF having a car, supplying a car that was Nathan Quinn, finished in the points, or would have been in the points, but in the top 10 of a world championship rally. We had the best placed ASN homologation car, the opportunity to bring more cars into world championship activity in the top 10. We've had all these things happening, and lots of good things came out of Australia, which people haven't yet cottoned on to. But mainly, going back to promotion, those are the people aren't to be promoted.
No, I was just about to say, that would fall outside, I guess, of the WRC promoters' remit, of obviously the Australian Rally Championship and things like that. And you've just mentioned about the ASN cars there. Now, one thing that keeps on coming up, and there's a reoccurring kind of thing that we spoke about on Rally du Var last weekend, for instance, one of the car zeros was an R4 car. Now we've got AP4 Plus, of course, over on the R4 kit.
R4 kit
that was run.
Not the same.
No, okay. I know that it's not the same, but there's a kit now available, obviously, which is €100,000, whatever it is, and you can put it into pretty much any car. I still don't quite understand the concept of R4, and I can remember speaking to somebody quite senior at Subaru when they were trying to get it going, when they were trying to get Super 2 cars and Group N cars on a level playing field, and I didn't understand it then, and still to this day, I don't understand it now, and I don't see where there's a place for it. By all means, put me straight.
Well, R4 represents the current philosophy for Group N in various forms. But clearly, is the fact that the manufacturer of Group N type cars, competitive cars, has just ended. It doesn't happen anymore, not in the way that we know. So that left a void that needed to be filled. At the same time, people all over the world in different countries have adopted their own formulae to produce competitive, exciting cars to fill the void that used to be filled by Group N. Spain, Australia, New Zealand, all these different countries have been doing this. And it's clearly a question of trying to regularize what everybody's doing. And on this, the FIA have been slow. They've seen how that Argentina came up with the maxi rally idea. They have seen that New Zealand have the AP4 plus cars, the 1.8 litre cars. Australia have been mixing different people's cars of different origins together, and it was in order almost like to assert their leadership in this that they have gone down the R4 kit line, but it's to fill a need, but whether it's going to work or not, particularly on a financial basis.
Well, that's
ways to be seen.
Well, that's where we go with this. By the time you build one, you're in the realms of a used R5 car. So, you know, I know the rebuild costs supposedly are going to be cheaper and stuff like that. I just don't see it, Martin. I didn't see it in 2010 when they tried to do it with Group N cars, where they tried to up-spec them to get them on par with a Super 2 car. I just don't understand the concept. And, you know, and this is where I was going to come to. And again, is the concept of homologation and trying to stay within FIA guidelines strangling the lower echelons of the sport?
Don't know. I mean, clearly, I think there's a hell of a lot of sense in many different ways to encourage all different levels of Group R, not the least of which is the whole control of the design of the cars, not only from the safety point of view, but on the street legality point of view. These are issues which the FIA has to take extremely seriously, which individual federations and national federations can handle in the way that they want. But across the board, the FIA cannot follow what is acceptable in different countries. And they've gone down the line of the ASN regulation, homologation, just to see how things go. But I can't believe we've seen the end of this question.
No, absolutely not. Martin, before I do let you go, I'd just like to maybe take you through your best memories of what you've described as your best ever season. What are some of the memories you'll take from the 2017 WRC season and not just WRC, I guess?
Well, another British rally winner, clearly. I mean, I may be English, but still, the Welsh come under our control, and so we're very pleased with them. No, I mean, Gwyndaf started the season in a great way, and he's that gone on and on.
That was his dad.
That's how Gwyndaf, Elvin, yes.
They are showing our age, though.
He started the season in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's been a delight, really, really has been a delight.
And that's been your best memory from the 2017 year. With regards to outside of that, are we comfortable with other championships? Are we feeling good about, you know, British Championship? You know, are we feeling good about?
It's interesting. This leads on to a lot of other topics, but basically, one of my regrets is the fact that the British sporting media pays no attention to what goes on outside the World Championship. I mean, last weekend, we had the most thrilling end to the FIA Championship, Codeter Championship, you could ever imagine. It ended up with Sauber 1 point ahead of Legato. But it was whoever was going to beat the other on the final round, and their teammates, was going to be Codeter champion in the Fabias. And in the end, it looked all settled because on the last day, what was it? Sauber had I can't remember, gearbox failure. And then, Legato only had to cruise to the finish and win the title. And then, two stages from the end, he had a transmission failure, a Prochar failure. And he struggled and struggled and struggled, and he finished, I think, 11th place. And in the championship, I think he had to finish in the top 8 in order to score points, and he didn't score enough points to be champion. Now, that was gripping stuff.
Yeah.
But, of course, people have been conditioned to believe that anything outside the World Championship can't possibly be exciting, and I think that's a pity.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But, you know, it's something I love trying to keep up to speed with what's going on. Obviously, it was the Canadian Rally Championship as well, the Tall Pines last weekend. And, you know, we didn't really talk about too much about that. We'll get Antoine on again soon, by the way, folks. But, you know, there's lots of other things going on. And, sometimes again, it's about telling the story. And, you know, obviously, Martin, that's what you do. And I'm quite passionate about some of the stories behind some of the rallies and indeed some of the drivers and why they're there and things like that. And as you say, I think there's definitely a missing link sometimes where it is, you know, I don't know whether it's attention span and things like that. You know, are people interested in the story anymore? They just want to fast forward to the end and find out what happened. You know, there's that element too, which I find disappointing, and maybe it's a generational thing. I really don't know. I really don't know. But anyway, Martin...
Anyway, do have a quick look at PaceNets to see what the things happening. But I think 2017 has been a really fantastic season. And thank you very much for giving me the chance to tell people about it.
No worries at all. We will have you back, of course, next year. And thank you for joining us throughout the season. Folks, that was Martin Holmes. We will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.